the OTB Podcast Network.
Stuart Lancaster, good morning to you. How are you?
Yes, very good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. Commiserations. I don't know how long it takes you to get over a defeat like La Rochelle, or if it's the type of thing that you kind of try and nurse the grievance for into next season so that it fuels the fire.
Be a long time. Every defeat sticks with me, if I'm being honest. The victories are great, but the defeats stick longer, a lot longer, trust me. And, having put ourselves in a position, I know it was through a COVID year, but we still went up two pool games, fair and square, went down to Exeter and got the unlucky draw away from home to Exeter and away from home to La Rochelle. To put ourselves in a position, not only in the game as well, to get to a final again and then to lose was very disappointing. And, it's taken a bit to pick the players up this week, obviously because, they care a lot and, they wanted to do the same. So, it's been a tough week, but we've worked our way through it. We've taken the lessons, recalibrated, if you like, and got ourselves ready for Connacht this Saturday.
Those lessons, are they long-term lessons as opposed to short-term, we need to fix certain individual things this week? Like, does a defeat in the semi-final of the European Cup, particularly in the wake of similar but different, obviously, defeats against Saracens in recent years, does that form conversations around player recruitment, around playing style, or do you just have to focus in the here and now and go, well, what are the actual individual things that resulted in the tries at the weekend that we conceded?
I think it's both. I think it's everything. Any good coaching team, any good environment, would constantly check and challenge themselves about the direction that they're going and, what we did in the lead up to the game, what we did during the game, what could we have done, in terms of the squad, the depth, the injury profile that we had leading into the game. We're losing, Caelan Doris, Johnny Sexton, Dan Levy, Reece Ruddock pulling out, during the game, Jameson Gibson Park. The list goes on. There was a lot of good players sat on the sideline watching that game. And so you question everything, really. And I think you should. I think that's what the best teams do. It's a combination of the two. Obviously, with the players, we meet them on the... it was a Tuesday morning because obviously we played Sunday. It's trying to give them balance and perspective, but also lessons that we can learn and also elements of accountability as well. And both from ourselves as coaches, but also them as players. And I think I alluded to, I don't know if you picked up on it, to the Patriots. And I've been reading The Dynasty and... how their dynasty started in 2002 when they won the Super Bowl and, they won it again sixth time, 2018, 2019, I think it was. But that means there's 12 seasons of them not winning it, losing in a playoff game, losing in a final. And I said it's very, very tough. And I think some great lessons there for some of the younger players who I think sometimes think that, Leinster will always be in a final. Well, it's so hard to do, so hard to do. And rugby is a sport that's, it's a blink of an eye moment that can be the difference between defeat and victory. It's the speed of ball from a particular breakdown. It's the bounce of a ball. It's a referee's decision. And it's very hard to do. And La Rochelle on the day deserved it.
Was there something structurally different about La Rochelle when you actually went onto the field that you hadn't noticed or that was different from what you had expected in the research that you'd done and the...
Not really. I mean, obviously we knew hundreds of games of La Rochelle, taking it all the way back to, Exeter beat them home and away the previous year. And that was with crowds. So to go to La Rochelle, what Exeter did was amazing, really. And then Exeter beat them at Sandy Park. And obviously we knew Exeter well, so I could show clips of that, but also showed lots of clips of improvements that La Rochelle had made over the last 12 months since that game. And one of the key additions for me to La Rochelle was Will Skelton. And without, overstating his influence on the game, I think he was a significant recruitment for them. The quality of the players they have, the French-based players are getting better and better. I think the coaching they receive, obviously Jono and Rog, you know, had them well organised and prepped. So, you know, we knew they'd go hard at the defensive ruck. We knew that they would try and slow our ball down. We knew that, you know, Skelton was going to be a force, and they would try and get you on the power plays. You know, get into an arm wrestle and get you on the power play. And unfortunately, that was the way it played out. You know, I didn't feel we probably got the reward on the scoreboard that we deserved in the first half. I thought we moved the ball around well. You know, they hung in there. They gave a lot of penalties away. We took the points as and when we could. But they got their points without having to work too hard. So you're going 13-12, having, you know, controlled a lot of that first half and played the way we wanted to play. It was very similar, and I know the comparison has been made, very similar to that Saracens game in Newcastle, where we were, 10-3, weren't we? Then they scored on the final play just before half-time, and 10-0, we went in 10-0. And there was a significant period in the second half, I felt, when James Lowe got binned, and Will Skelton particularly bust a couple of tackles. They got a scrum penalty, and you felt the momentum switch and their powerful power game, you know, came into play.
You talked about the recruitment of Skelton and how important that was, and you mentioned power a couple of times in that conversation. And, if we think back to the analysis of Ireland-England at Twickenham when they had Vinopola and Tuilagi and they ran over us in 2019, it's been a fairly common conversation about the difference in power of the Irish players versus the power that is available from through the Islanders and through recruitment at club level and at international level for other countries. What do we do about that problem, Stuart?
Well, also, I mean, don't forget, Joe, Ireland beat England not so long ago in the end of the Six Nations. So, there's always ways to beat the power-based teams. You know, you think about New Zealand, you know, yes, you would say they have some powerful players, but also they have some very, very skillful, dynamic, quick players as well. And they play a game of rugby that can take teams to a place that they can't deal with. But on any given day, you know, this is the beauty, I guess, of rugby. From a coaching point of view, I've seen New Zealand, South Africa, who are big and powerful, but equally I've seen South Africa beat New Zealand on the power game. We all saw England beat New Zealand in the semi-final of a World Cup and then lose against South Africa, in a final. So, but there obviously are ways. You need to get everything right. I think in terms of like magic wand, do we change the model in Ireland and go and have the French model, which means that you have maybe, I don't know, what, 50% of your squad is homegrown and then the rest are from, South Africa, New Zealand, wherever, Australia. I don't think that's the answer, personally. The genetic makeup of the country in Ireland is what it is. But that doesn't mean you can't win games. And I think we've proved, we've lost, against Saracens and now La Rochelle, but also we've beaten Toulouse, who are unbelievably powerful. We've beaten big French teams and English teams, home and away. So I don't feel we need to change our philosophy. Recruitment-wise, definitely when Leinster have been successful over the years, and this is before my time, there's always been like a Brad Thorne or a Rocky Elsom or someone like that. And I think, with Scott Fardy leaving and one or two others, there's definitely room for one player like that, I think, in the pack particularly. But I think we also should be proud of what we have in terms of the homegrown talent. And also, I look at the age profile of a Leinster squad and the quality of the young players that we have. And I'm talking about young being, a Gary Ringrose young or a James Ryan young, who have still got a long way to go to hit their absolute peak and where we can get to in the future. I think we're in great shape. One thing to bear in mind as well, obviously, Jerry, is, the French teams have signed a TV deal that's, astronomical in terms of like the finances for their game. They're allowed to bring in medical jokers. They can lose a player in a season and bring in someone bigger and better. So it is a different playing field, but it's not one I think we can't overcome.
When you talk about the genetic makeup of the talent pool of Ireland, is there just an acceptance then that the Leinster Academy, while it will be stocked with unbelievably talented rugby players, it just simply won't be as powerful as some of the academies elsewhere around the world, especially in the Southern Hemisphere?
Well, no, you still get powerful players. You know, we've still got lads who I look at now and I think, you know, this guy is a serious player and serious size and talent. It's not just about that, but, you know, the exceptional power. I mean, like Antonio and Will Skelton alone, you know, you're talking nearly 180 kg between them. You know, there's not that type of player in Ireland. But that doesn't mean we haven't got powerful players and we can't play a game that's going to win at the highest level. Because I've cited the example of New Zealand, you know, and I've cited the example of Leinster. You know, we've, in my time in 5 years, one pool game. We score an average of 4.5 tries in Europe every season. So that's our average tries. So, you know, we can do it on the day, on that particular day against La Rochelle. We didn't quite take them to the place that we needed to and get the score line where we needed it to be. And they came back into the game. But as I say, there's so many other factors that can come into that. Like, as I say, the quality of players we didn't have available, the way the game's refereed, you know, particularly the defensive breakdown. You know, if the referee continues to ping La Rochelle, we continue to build our score. Ifs, buts and maybes, I know, but I don't think there's something fundamentally wrong with Irish rugby to say that Ireland rugby can't dine at the top table both in Europe and at national level.
It's interesting as well that you mentioned there the younger players who are now growing into their peak. The talk when it comes to transition is generally about some of the older players who may be over the hill, and that's the element that people focus on. But transition, I presume, from your perspective, also focuses on those younger players who step up to become leaders. How much of a role do you have in that as somebody centrally involved in the Leinster setup?
No, I think we all do, really. We all try to grow the leadership in the group. You know, like I say, a lot of the leadership would have centred around previously, you know, a Jimmy Heaslip, an Issa Nasiwa, Johnny, obviously, Sean O'Brien, and Fergus McFadden, Rob Carney. You know, and these guys leave, and our job is for Leinster to be continually successful. Now, I go back to the Patriots analogy. You know, that's 18 years with 6 Super Bowl wins, but 12 seasons where they've not won. And you know, what we want for Leinster is to win every year, obviously, but it's not, hopefully, it's not realistic that that's going to happen every year. But we definitely want to be in semi-finals and finals. And I think when we have that transition taking place, the trick is for one or two players at the top end to drop away and leave on great terms, and then for the next generation to come through and take the lead. And I truly believe if you go through, again, you know, take some of the back rowers, whether it's a Jack Conan, a Caelan Doris, you've got James Ryan, you've got Ryan Baird coming through. In the front row, you've got Andrew Porter, Dan Sheehan, Ronan Kelleher. You've got Luke McGrath, Jameson Gibson-Park, Ross Byrne, Harry Byrne, Kieran Frawley, Robbie, Gary, Jordan, Hugo Keenan. You know, these lads are 22, 23, 24, 25 years old. You know, I think part of the reason I was keen to stay for another 2 years because I truly believe in the potential of the group. And I think it's only going to get better the more that we go through experiences like that. And not that you'd want to have that. I mean, you know, I was asked a question in the media the other day about the South African teams coming in the Pro 16. And I think it's needed. You know, I think there's only so many times we can play, you know, Munster or an Ulster or a Connacht. And I think we need that new challenge of playing the power-based teams to learn how to win. I think our leadership model is good, and I think there is definitely a growth in those, they're not young players anymore, but you know, those players who are the next generation of leaders for Leinster.
In a way then, that's kind of agreeing with what Brian O'Driscoll was saying here about the league needing to get stronger to prepare teams better for Europe.
Yeah, again, you know, with And I agree with him 100%. One of the challenges, and this isn't an excuse, this is just the reality of the situation, and it's not something I've seen anywhere else, where so many of the Leinster players are Ireland players as well. So, you know, if you were to go through their season from end of lockdown one, you know, we went two games against Ulster and Munster, then we went Pro 14 semi, Pro 14 final against Munster. The week after we played Saracens in the quarterfinal, the week after that, obviously we didn't achieve that win. It was the semi-final. The week after that, the new season started. Then those autumn internationals came around. We had then the Christmas period. Then the Six Nations came, and everything. And you guys obviously were, you know, very cognizant of what was going on in the Six Nations and the challenges and the way that Ireland finished successfully. Then you're straight into Europe, you know. So for a Leinster squad that produces so many international players as well, you know, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. And, you know, with South African teams coming in, of course, you know, we want that challenge, but we want that challenge when we've got our best squad available. And the reality is, you know, when, if we look at the makeup of next season, hopefully, well, we'll see what happens at 12:30 today. We'll have a few lads going on the British and Irish Lions tour to South Africa. Which means that they'll come back into what pre-season at the end of September. There'll be November internationals, there'll be Christmas, there'll be Six Nations. And that you could be talking, I don't know, four or five players like that. You could have up to 15, 16, 17, 18 players playing in the November internationals and Six Nations with Ireland. And so if we were to play at a Bulls or a Stormers or a Sharks or whatever, you know, we could easily be playing them in those windows where we don't have necessarily the best players. We can still learn, and it's brilliant for the development of the younger players. But do you get my point?
Yeah. It's a juggling act, and it's very difficult to keep all those balls in the air at the same time.
Yeah, and that's a lot different from, say, a Crusaders, who are successful in the Southern Hemisphere, who go, you know, start the season a Crusader, finish the season a Crusader, and then become an All Black.
The split season makes a lot of sense. A global calendar.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Please, tell me about it. I mean, and not only that, I mean, again, part of the reason why someone like me, and I know the other coaches feel this way, I do think, hopefully, you know, I'm an eternal optimist, that the World Club Challenge will come around at some point again, at some point in the future. And I want to be, you know, around for that type of competition as well. And I'm... It might not be now before the World Cup. It might be obviously the period after the 2023 World Cup. But how exciting would that be as well, you know, for a team like Leinster or a Munster, Ulster or Connacht or whatever, you know, to try and to go into that sort of competition as well. I mean, that's where I think the club game should go personally. But, you know, as you say, the structure in the Northern Hemisphere, I know the Southern Hemisphere, they will complain about it. But for me, the structure in the Northern Hemisphere is more challenging, particularly for a club like Leinster when you have so many players who have to. And it's not just the playing, it's the emotional, you know, commitment it takes to play international rugby, the challenge of international rugby, and everything that goes into it. You know, you can only dip into the well so many times.
Do you find that players come back from the international window with positives gained at all, Stuart? Obviously, there's the physical and mental toll, as you outlined there. But, like, I guess when it comes to the Lions, even this summer, there's often a lot of talk about what the players gain from learning from other players from other countries, for example. Do you get the same thing when they come back from Ireland at all, that they have a greater understanding or an appreciation to get to a higher level?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's great that they can do that, and I think it's great that we can have a really good relationship with the national coaches as well. I mean, I think it's something I tried to do in England, where I tried, you know, obviously it's different in England in that you've got 12 premiership clubs that you're dealing with as a national coach, and you're trying to create dialogue and debate and learnings. You know, I remember coming back from New Zealand in 2014, and I put on a little director of rugby conference and basically went through what we learned from the tour. I showed clips of the games, you know, and I still think that's the right way to do it. And I think, you know, we're lucky with Andy and obviously Mike and John and Simon and guys, you know, we know well, Paul obviously, and they're now, you know, that we can have that debate and that relationship. And I think for me, diversity of opinion is absolutely key. I mean, as long as the players have got an open mind, I mean, that's one of the key things I think in the best players is that sort of growth mindset, that desire to not close and fix your mind into one way of playing or one style and to think how I can get better, take every opportunity to learn and grow. Then you can get the best of both worlds. But yeah, it is a challenge for the players as well, as I say, it's just simply because of the emotional, physical commitment in a sport like rugby, where you're trying to get up for your country, but also for your province in big games.
Before we let you go, do you have any insight into who's getting picked today at 12:30? Did someone tip you the wink? Do you already know?
What do you mean, Robin McBride? You mean? No, actually, genuinely, I don't, because I think the selection meeting was yesterday, but I've not seen Robin since it took place. So I don't. I've got my fingers crossed for obviously the Irish lads, but also the Leinster lads, because I know how much they would benefit from it and they would grow from it. But one thing, again, I said in the media the other day, I think a lot will be put into what happens today, and rightly so. It's the first selection, but you can't tell me with what's coming up. You know, we've got three or four or five potentially games left. There's the English Premiership to finish off, and the semi-finals and the final of the English Premiership. So you've got those games. You've got then the warm-up games against Japan. You've got the Bulls, the Sharks, the Stormers, whoever it is. You know, these massive South African teams ready to, you know, get steamed into the Lions. Then you've got like a South Africa Invitational team. You can't tell me that the 36 players that get announced here are going to be the only 36 players that play.
No, 100%. That final test.
You know what I mean? So I just think you could be talking another 10, if not more, that will be playing. And there's always tales in Lions years of the guy that was never on the plane to start with ends up being the star of the third test. So my advice would be to anyone, you know, from Leinster or from any other country for that matter, if you're not in the 36, then get yourself on your country's tour and make sure you're ready. And I think one of the advantages this year is that, you know, the countries, the overseas tours have been cancelled, aren't they? You know, so Ireland aren't going to Fiji anymore, and hopefully Ireland will have some form of like local-based international games that, you know, England playing USA and Canada, for example, in England. And you know, the logistics of getting from London to South Africa, you know, you can do it overnight. And I think, you know, we don't have to go through the whole geography four or whatever it's called. You know, the geography six? You know, we don't have to go through all that, because I think the next best will get picked. And I think they'll definitely be needed. So if any of our lads don't get picked, my message to them will be keep training, keep playing, make sure you're ready.
Sure, good stuff. Great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Okay, cheers.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.